comic books, movies, TV, and more. Nerds are everywhere. It's time to assemble! It's Nerds United, a Jittery Monkey podcast. Here's your host, Greg Mahochko.
Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of Nerds United on the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. My name is Greg Mahochko. Joining me, as always, is the co-host of the year, Mike Luther. Hello, Mike.
Hello again, Greg.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing good.
Good.
It's our third introduction of the night.
And you've been doing good all in all of them, so I'm proud of you.
Yeah.
We say third introduction. Check out YouTube later today / week. We did two videos. One of them's a commercial, the other one's actual content. We hope that you enjoy them both and provide your feedback in the comment section.
Yeah, like them, subscribe to them, comment on them. We need to get those subscriptions up.
Just like the Oneaters, do that thing you do.
True. It's a good movie. Actually, a good song, really.
Both.
Yeah.
I think that was Tom Hanks' directorial debut, if I remember correctly.
I believe so.
So.
Yes.
All right. Well, let's get into it then, shall we, Mike? We got a lot to discuss this week, and it's already 10 to 10. So.
Yes.
We would have done this last night, but I was already asleep by this time.
Yep.
My apologies to you, Mike.
Quite all right.
We're going to start this show by briefly going over a character in that book that we know and love and are almost done with, The League of Regrettable Superheroes by John Morris, the Loot Crate edition. And we're going all the way back to 1956. Charlton Comics, we're going to be talking about them, I think, a lot here before it's all said and done. This was created by one half of the creative team behind the superhero that started it all. Of course, in reference to Superman. Created by Jerry Siegel. And debuting in his own titled book, issue number 22. The reason for that is because this character took over Charlton's Blue Beetle comic, replacing that hero's name in the title, however, keeping the numbering. So rather than going back to number one, after Blue Beetle was, by the way, Blue Beetle would go on to have a fantastic career with the DC Comics, instead we have Mr. Muscles. It was
Which is the name I give myself.
I was going to say, it was the name that Mike was born to play. It's a promising, bang-up, thrilling displays of physical strength and power. Inside the book, readers offered a glimpse at what the world's mightiest man and most perfect specimen of manhood alive, a.k.a. the greatest crusader for clean living and justice the world has ever known. It was the 50s. We had to worry about, they made a movie out of this. Reefer Mania.
Oh God, yeah.
You had to have that clean living, Mike, in the 50s. Think about it, though. We are at, right now, in America, even with everything that's going on in America, we are at the height of freedom. You know, like, no civilization in history has had as much freedom and opportunity as we do. Post-World War II America had to be like the roaring 20s plus 30 years, man. Everybody's just all dancing and sock hopping and everything else. It had to be, you know, great, great living in the 50s.
I mean,
for most people, for a lot of people.
Well, for a lot of people, it was very bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
For people like me and you, we probably would have been okay.
All I know is that the 50s were when my parents were born, so I know that at least four people were having a good time.
Yeah.
And yeah. I'm shuddering now on the inside, just having expelled that thought verbally.
Yeah, yeah. You said it, not me.
Mm. I did find out a few Christmases ago, and I don't know if I told this on the show, but I did find out that it was either my mom or my uncle, her younger brother, was an accident. And you just don't want to think about that with your grandparents. You just want to think that the only times that they, you know, were planned times for procreation. That's all.
I think a lot of people were accidents. I'm pretty sure of it. By the way, I just want to say real quick. So, not to get off topic here.
50% of the people in your home?
100% of the people in my home. for sure. Okay, I told you on the YouTube, I have two dogs here. I'm dog sitting for my brother's right. Family. So we have Harley. Harley's the older dog. Harley really likes me. But right now she's sitting on the bed. She's just laying on the bed. She's kind of staring at me right now because I'm talking about her. Ivy is the younger one. I think Ivy likes Nolan more because, so I'm in my room right now. The door's open to my room, so she can get in and out of my room. Nolan is right across the hallway in his room, and doors closed. Ivy is literally just laying on by his door, whining.
Mm-hmm. I can't hear it.
It's just a quiet little whine, quiet little whimper. Everyone's talking here, but she's just laying there, just right by his door. So, you dogs, you chose your side. Oh, not you. Nope. I don't know where she's going now. But anyway.
My dog will, when I'm upstairs locked away in my room working, like trying to make phone calls or something like that, actually doing work, and the door's closed, well, my boy, he'll just come up, you know, running in and opening the door and, you know, interrupting everything. But the dog doesn't have thumbs. I don't know if you know that about dogs. So she'll just, I hear her, like, you know, circling around and then thump. And it's laying up as close as, like, usually up, like, half onto the door so that as soon as I open the door, I'm supposed to know that she's there. She's like, okay, I'm here. Why didn't you let me in? Why'd you keep me out? The dog definitely loves me. So, anyway, that's as exciting as Mr. Muscles is.
So, basically, he's just a really, really strong guy.
Yeah. Let's see, a former weakling named Brett Carson, who a few years before the beginning of the story was suffering advanced stages of polio. Facing imminent paralysis, he dedicated himself to recovering his lost mobility. During the subsequent months of struggle, he slowly recovers in small, painful bursts. He moves his fingers, he's able to sit, while receiving consistent lack of encouragement from his doctors. After being told he'll never walk again, Brett proudly strolls out of the hospital, pledging to achieve absolute perfection.
Stupid doctors don't know what they're doing.
But it doesn't say, like, I'm, oh, by the way, there's a Miss Muscles.
And a Kid Muscles.
And Kid Muscle. but it doesn't say, like, anything that he does, like, how he beats polio. Now, because of vaccines, polio's been largely eradicated. However, I don't think like you can just will polio away.
The 1950s willpower, man.
Like
it was different. It was different back in the days.
I mean, we're gonna
need no vaccine.
We're gonna talk here in just a little bit about the latest episode of Cobra Kai and how there are actually some similarities because you have someone who's, you know, bedridden, wheelchair ridden, and then just like that, he's up walking and throwing kicks. I don't know. Mr.
By the way, this the same guy you're talking about, this is first season, so spoiler alert. He also had asthma in the first season.
That's true.
And got rid of it because he just had to, I guess.
It was an inconvenience.
Yeah.
I love this last paragraph from our writer John Morris about Mr. Muscles. He says, obviously intended to promote the idea of physical fitness, extreme physical fitness even, Mr. Muscles lacked the stamina to keep it up. Two issues was the super bodybuilder's max rep before blowout. Mr. Muscles hasn't picked up the barbell since.
It's obviously in the Regrettable Superheroes book, but I'm kind of surprised it didn't last a little bit longer, just because, like, what did they have in the 50s, you know?
By the 50s, you had Superman, Batman, Green Lantern, Wonder Woman. You had Captain America. I believe you had the Fantastic Four. And Mr. Muscles
could have been right there. Any of those guys beat polio on their own? No.
I'm pretty sure that Superman beat polio by not being an Earthling.
He didn't have polio. There's a difference between not getting polio and beating polio.
That's true. That's true. Although it's like prevention, it's like STDs. If you don't have sex, you're not going to catch one. I'm pretty sure that's how it works.
I guess so.
By the way, Mr. Muscles, Rogues Gallery, as it were, are carnies, the mob, or that's the name of the group of carnies, a conniving wrestler named Jake Armbuster, a red-headed abominable snowman, and a mad zookeeper whose envy of Mr. Muscles' physique drives him to arrange a murder by tiger.
Okay.
And all that in two episodes.
That's a horrible way to go.
All of that in two episodes for Mr. Muscles. So
they would have stretched that out, you know?
We could be having... I mean, look, there's one Charlton character already coming to HBO Max in the near future by way of the Peacemaker. We're going to talk about him down the road. But, yes. Mike, right now let's talk about some books that we've read that we've enjoyed.
All right.
And since you read two, so we're going to go you.
Okay.
We're going to sandwich my really great book in between your also equally good books.
Okay. So the first book I read is, classic, I guess. I'd heard many things about it. And I had an idea. By the way, the only thing way I can really talk about this book is to spoil it. So, if you have not read Batman Hush yet, stop and go to Twilight Comics, Swansea, Illinois, and get it. Very, very good graphic novel by Jeff Loeb, Jim Lee, and Scott Williams. Essentially, what happens is it starts off that somebody, Killer Croc has kidnapped this child. He's like a billionaire's or some big company's child, kidnaps him. Batman, of course, starts chasing after him. And as he's chasing him, Batman's grappling line gets cut, and he ends up falling however many stories onto the pavement and bruises, very badly injures himself. He manages to say to, I think Huntress came to help him out, and he tells her, call Dr. Thomas Elliot, who you come to find out is one of his childhood friends. So the whole story is all about, the main part of it is about who cut his line. Because you come to find out it's a guy with bandages all over his face, and he's kind of been manipulating and pulling the strings on everyone else. Because it's not just Batman and Hush, who the character's name is. It's not just them. It's like Poison Ivy gets involved, and Superman, Poison Ivy influences Superman, and so Superman is fighting Batman. And there's all kinds of different characters. And you come to find out, like, how close Thomas Elliot was to young Bruce Wayne. They were, like I said, they were childhood friends. And it kind of flashes back and forth, or, page by page, of them as they were young. And I believe, Thomas Elliot he fixes, he's like a world renowned brain surgeon or something like that, I think. I can't remember exactly. But he fixes him all up, and then Bruce Wayne's like, hey, I'm really sorry that, you know, we haven't been as close since we were friends and stuff like that, and I'm going to change that. But still, Batman is chasing after this character. So this is where I'm going to spoil it. So the person that was in bandages is implied because, and I didn't realize this at first, you never actually see him take the bandages off in the comic book. But it is implied, very heavily implied, that the person was actually Thomas Elliot. Because Thomas Elliot was upset, because one of the stories you hear is Thomas Elliot's mom and dad, they were in a bad car wreck or something like that, and Thomas Wayne, Bruce Wayne's dad, was a doctor, and he saved his mom, but he couldn't save his dad, I believe, right? And so you think that's the reason that Thomas Elliot is going after, you know, Batman Bruce Wayne, because like he finds out that Batman is Bruce Wayne. But that's not the real story. The real story was that Thomas Elliot, when he was young, wanted both of his parents to die. He somehow caused the car crash, or he messed with the brake lines or something like that, and he was mad at Thomas Wayne for because he wanted that money, you know, he wanted his trust, and he even said, he's like, I had to wait, you know, for my mom to die of cancer before I could get it, and that was, you know, decades down the line, which is sad in and of itself. So I think Thomas Elliot gets away. No. Yeah, maybe I think it's away. But anyway, kind of going back and forth there. You don't think it's Thomas Elliot at first. I kind of did, though. Because one of the first couple pages or whatever, you know, first arc, Thomas, you see Joker with a gun and Thomas Elliot with a bullet hole, you know, in his chest. And he's lying there dead. And actually, Bruce Wayne, well, Batman, almost kills Joker in that instance. Like, Jim Gordon has to basically, like, threaten to shoot Batman and say, if you do this, you know better than them and stuff. But that ended up being Clayface as Tim Elliott. I thought from the beginning that it was Tim Elliott, or, yeah, this, yeah, no, Thomas Elliott, sorry. Just he seemed a little creepy, right? He seemed a little evil. But anyway, so then you go a little bit further, and Thomas Elliot is the one that was pulling the strings for everybody. He was just part of it. He was just one of the puppets. The big, I guess, bigger reveal is that it was actually the Riddler. And the Riddler had actually used the Lazarus Pit because he had brain cancer, and he was going to die. And so he uses the Lazarus Pit. And when you use the Lazarus Pit, not only does it rejuvenate your health, but you learn all these secrets. And so that's how he learned that Bruce Wayne was Batman. So then he, you know, told, I think the only person he maybe told was Thomas Elliot, but he had everybody else, you know, Joker, Clayface, Poison Ivy, even Catwoman. By the way, there's like a little love interest between Catwoman, okay? Not in this book, but that's in my own book. Between Batman and Catwoman. One thing I like at the end, the Riddler's, you know, telling Bruce Wayne this, because Bruce Wayne figures it out. You know, finally he figures it out that, you know, the Riddler was the main guy around all this. And the Riddler's like, well, yeah, but I know your secret now. I know Bruce Wayne is Batman. And Batman is like, yeah, but something like a riddle is useless if everybody knows it. And he's like, if you tell anybody, I know you used one of the Lazarus Pit and Ra's al Ghul. I don't know if it's I'll say Ra's actually.
I think it depends on, you know, like the who's saying it, you know.
Yeah.
Like I think it was even different in like I think we only really got, as far as live action, I think we only really heard about it in Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Raish, Raz. I grew up on Raz because I think that's what it was on the animated series.
Raz okay, so I'll say Raz. He's like, and if Ra's al Ghul finds out who, like, you know, did that, he's going to have the entire League of Assassins coming after you. So it kind of ends there. But then I decided, I was like, you know what? I'm going to, because they had Batman Hush, the animated movie, on HBO Max. And I'm like, I'm going to go watch that. Because, you know, I've just read the comic. In fact, I was like, I need to finish this comic book so I can watch the movie. You know, gotta have your dinner first before you have your desserts. And I watched it, and I told you this, Greg. Maybe my opinion would have been different, or the way I feel about it would have been different if I wouldn't have read the comic first, if I would have just seen the movie. But I was highly disappointed in the movie. There's no Thomas Elliot underneath the bandages. It was the Riddler underneath the bandages. There's a mention of Thomas Elliot. You see him in the beginning. He fixes Bruce Wayne, and then there's not much more. Another thing in the comic books is at one point in time, you see the guy in bandages. He's fighting Bruce Wayne, and he starts taking the bandages off. And it's Jason Todd.
Oh, yeah.
And they fight back and forth and stuff like that. And finally, Bruce Wayne Batman realizes, okay, that's not the real Jason Todd, because he's not fighting me like Jason Todd would fight me, you know. And then you come to find out that was actually Clayface.
Mm-hmm.
In the movie, it's just the Riddler, but the Riddler as Clayface or whatever, like. It's just little stuff where I don't need a direct adaptation. I don't want a direct adaptation of it. But I'm like, if you're going to make an adaptation of it, make it better or equal to. And I don't think the movie was. For instance, like one of the first scenes is Batman, instead of chasing Killer Croc, kidnapping this kid, it's Bane. And I'm like, well, why did you make that choice? Now, it could have been because Bane's a more popular character, but I'm like, it doesn't, you know, you don't need to have Killer Croc, but why not have Killer Croc?
Right.
Because one of the reason it was Killer Croc in the comic books is because somebody, it might have been Thomas Elliot, somebody said, if you do this, the money will pay for your surgery to look human again or something like that. And then in the movie, it's like, well, he's going to give me more power.
Yeah.
So, you know, so I was a little, it was okay. Like I said, I might have been because I read the comic book first and then the movie came. Another thing I like about the comic book, and a lot of the comic books that I've been reading, you can read Batman's thoughts and why he's doing this. And, you know, and it brings you more into his detective mode mindset than you can get in a movie, right? In a movie, it just looks like he's punching and, you know, in the comic books, he knows, well, this is the weak point and, you know, I know he's going to, if I punch him here, he's going to want to dodge, so I'm going to go over here. Like, you get in his mindset a little bit more. Yes.
Did you ever watch the Robert Downey Jr. Sherlock Holmes movies?
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah,
I feel like there's a scene in that first one, and I'm more familiar with the first one than the second one. I own them both, but I've seen the second one a couple of times. I'll be honest with you, I can't remember anything about it except that Sherlock Holmes is in it.
Right.
And Watson. But in that first one, you know, the way it's written and shot and executed, it's a scene where Holmes is in like the fighting pit and, you know, he's getting his ass kicked. And then all of a sudden he says he like spots a weakness. And so he says, if I do this, then I can, you know, lead to this attack and this, and I'll thrust kick and everything else. And so he's, not premonition, but he's kind of running through what's about to happen in his mind. I feel like that would be a really good way to bring Batman you know, fights onto screen rather than just, you know, Christian Bale punching 18 guys, you know, in the face. Yeah. You know, have a little bit of forethought. You know, if he's the world's greatest detective and he has a contingency plan for anybody in the Justice League, well, then show some of that. And that's, right. You know, that's a very simple way to do it. It's been done. And do it again.
Yeah. And you kind of brought up another good thing. I don't think they've properly portrayed him being the world's greatest detective in anything I've seen.
Right.
You know, like, the only, like, I don't know, it's not even really detective work, but whatever he uses, like, the bullet analysis machine or whatever.
Yeah.
Figure out, you know, but like the fingerprints, I'm like, that's not really you doing it. That's the machine doing
right.
it, you know?
There's I don't know, maybe that's what Matt Reeves is doing with the Batman. I don't know. I feel like a year two Batman is not the world's greatest detective. He's just an angry guy who's going to unleash a lot of fury. I'm still excited for the movie.
Absolutely.
But
that brings up another good thing. Go ahead. I'll tell mine later.
I was going to say, but I feel like, you know, like Ben Affleck's Batman would be world's greatest detective if they ever made the movie that he was attached to.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, in the movies, we either get young Batman, or I say young, but like, you know, year one Batman, or old grizzled Batman. Like, Batfleck was technically like older Batman, you know, like kind of more. Wait, there's no like middle ground Batman, like year five Batman.
You're 10.
You're 5 to 8 Batman. You're 10 Batman, sure.
How old? I don't know, you know, it's been a long time since I've read year one. But I wonder how old Batman, like Bruce Wayne, is when he starts being Batman.
If I had to guess, and I'm going to look it up, but if I had to guess, I want to say 25.
I'm trying to go back to like Batman Begins. He leaves Gotham and he's, you know, like traveling across the world in a Tibetan prison or whatever, you know.
Right.
And so yeah, 25, 26 seems about right. Like we haven't had that 35 to 40 year old Batman yet.
So this is Batman Year One. It says Batman returns home to Gotham City at the age of 25 from training abroad.
All right, there you go.
So, yeah,
good job, Matt. Mike. I'm proud of you.
Yeah, go internet. So yeah, that's Batman Hush and Batman Hush the animated movie. I don't want to say cartoon because it's not a cartoon. The animated movie.
Do you think that Hush would be better suited because it's 11 or 12 issues of a comic book, 11, I think. Do you think it would have been better served as like a miniseries, like either animated or live action miniseries, rather than like throwing it into a 90-minute or whatever it is, a animated feature, whatever you want to call it?
I mean, maybe if you made like a 4-part series or something like that. I'm going to say like really like, add the part. First of all, I wish I would have seen the part with Jason Todd. You know, the fake Jason Todd, you know, the clayface Jason Todd on there, and have, you know, Thomas Elliott be underneath the mm-hmm. bandages. Don't have it be the Riddler. The Riddler in the comic was ahead of it all, yes, but there was other little parts
right.
that weren't Riddler that they just added Riddler in. So.
Okay.
But you also read a comic book.
I did read a comic book, Mike. I read, are you familiar with the Earth One, like the DC Comics Earth One series that have been out there? For example, I believe Earth One, I'm not going to look it up. I can't remember. I think Earth One Superman came first, and then Earth One Batman. And then, of course, there was eventually Earth One Wonder Woman. And I believe I have all those, and I've read all those.
Wait, you have Superman Earth One?
Somewhere, yeah. Or you do.
Okay, because I don't have it here, I know that. Because that's one that I was interested in, because I believe that was written by J. Michael Straczynski, which who also wrote Midnight Nation.
I think, yeah, I believe you're right. And I'll double-check the boxes sometime in the next week and let you know.
Yeah, no worries.
But one that I read was Earth 1, Volume 1, Green Lantern. And I think I spoke with you about it last week, although I think I did it either off air. But this is, it's still Hal Jordan, but it's not like Hal Jordan, the cocky test pilot that, you know, we all have come to know and love and mock apparently openly. Hal Jordan is already in space. It's set in like a futuristic world, like where they are mining asteroids, you know, so I don't read it as being like, you know, a contemporary piece. It's a little bit futuristic. But the book just came out. I'm trying to find out exactly when it was published. Oh, gosh. Okay, never mind. It came out 2 years ago. Apparently, I've been snoozing on it. But so written, well, it's collaborative forces, and I'm just going to do my best to, you know. Okay, so it's written by Corinna Bechko and Gabriel Hardman, with the art by Gabriel Hardman, colors by Jordan Boyd, letters by Simon Boland. The cover is by Hardman and Boyd. As I mentioned, Hal Jordan, he's in space, he's on an asteroid mining things like that, and the job is done. He's like, I'm not going back to Earth. That's it. I'm not doing it. I don't want it. There's nothing for me on Earth. So obviously it's like, you know, not Ferris Air at all. You know, right. Although that's Ferris, Carol Ferris is mentioned in the book, but there's no like love interest. He finds like wreckage that's been there for 100 years or more, and it is of course Abin Sur. He's oh, what is this chunk? And I think one of his coworkers is like, hey man, check this out. So kind of activates the ring, although it doesn't have a whole lot of charge. There's also a Manhunter, which is another group of Owen, like space police force that predates in the regular Green Lantern lore. It predates the Green Lanterns that got out of control. Like there was a ghost in the software, you know, ghost in the machine type of thing. So that's why the Owens, now Guardians. Whew. Yeah. That'd been bad. That's why they came up with the Green Lantern Corps to because the Manhunters had kind of run the territory too long. but Hal Jordan picks up this ring, and in doing so it activates the Manhunter. He actually destroys the Manhunter and then kind of like blacks out in space after this distress signal. He's picked up by everybody's favorite trainer of Green Lanterns, which is Kilowog. In Kilowog, like, there's no Green Lantern Corps. I think that's one of my favorite aspects about this book. Spoilers. There's no Green Lantern Corps. There's no, like, OA, Central Battery, you know, everything else. Like, everybody is just kind of doing their own thing. And if they have a ring, they're trying to help their home world. Kilowog actually kind of keeps his ring hidden from his like local, security forces and things like that on his world. Outsiders are not welcome on his world. So like he and Hal Jordan are chased off, but Kilowog's a scientist. He's like, what is an Earth human? I don't know anything about your people. So, it's a little bit about Hal Jordan kind of going around trying to put together a group of lanterns to, and then he magically ends up on a planet where he is enslaved and forced to mine, except instead of the nice tools that he added as in space, he's like in a cave or something like that with a chisel or a pickaxe, whatever it's called, and when you're mining for things. Not to spoil too much, but he's being hunted by the Manhunters who are in control on this planet, a group of them. He blasts through a wall to hide, and he stumbles across the central power battery. Supercharges his ring. He's able to, like, blast, you know, a dozen manhunters right away. He says, you know, if we can destroy this, like, containment dome that's over this thing, then we can, you know, everybody who's been limping along with very little charge on their rings and in their individual batteries, they can all, you know, be supercharged, and we can bring the fight to the manhunters. So it's about that. I thought the book was much more recent, so I was hesitant about spoiling things, but here I am spoiling things for a two-year-old book. Really enjoyed this take on Hal Jordan and how he kind of brings back the Green Lantern Corps. And then you find out he's when he first gets to the central battery, he like has a trans-universal conversation with one of the last remaining Guardians. And the Guardian is like, hey, this is how you're going to defeat those Manhunters. It's called like a reverb type of effect. Everybody's, all the Green Lanterns, when you get them all there, they all got to point their battery or their ring at the battery, and it'll, you know, echo out or shoot out the force. He's like, I don't know, that sounds sketchy. And I don't know who the Guardian is, but when he finds out that the Manhunters are gone, the battery is still intact, you see him. And he says, the Green Lantern Corps, or the Manhunters have failed, the Green Lantern Corps is back, we know that they're failures, it's time to rise the Yellow Lanterns.
Oh, so, okay.
It's very...
Does that end Volume 1 with that?
Pretty much, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Go right here to the end. This is, of course, an audio show, so this is for Mike's benefit only. And... Wait, that's him back on Earth briefly. Oh, come on now. You jackwagon. There we go. The bottom of that there.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, wow. Yeah.
So, it's like you can't have one without the other.
Yep.
So, I'm excited. I'll have to do some research to see if/when Volume 2 would be coming. But I'd be checking that out as well. But I was just happy to get down and get a little bit of reading done this past week. Like, and I had that done by Sunday, Mike. By Sunday.
I was just gonna say, yeah. You said Sunday or Monday, you had a ton.
So, all right. So that's Green Lantern Earth 1, Volume 1. Again, Gabriel Hardman, Corinna Bechko, Jordan Boyd, the creative team on that. Check it out wherever you like. Comic to procure your comic books, especially a brick and mortar local comic shop. Mine, of course, is Twilight Comics, Swansea, Illinois. And Mike, you read something else.
Yes. Before we show No Mercy to everybody,
we're going to strike hard and strike fast.
Yes. After I got done reading Batman Hush, I did what I normally do, is I have my backpack full of comic books that I use as my weights, because I have to work out at home, and I reached my hand in, pulled one out, and I said, oh, this is perfect, because the one I pulled out is Batman Under the Red Hood.
Ooh. Which
actually kind of, there's actually pages of Batman Hush and Batman Under the Red Hood. So essentially the story, and once again, I'm going to spoil this. It was actually, but I say I'm going to spoil it. It was spoiled for me, because, I mean, it's been out for a long time, and it's, you know, if you're on the internet at all, you know who's under the Red Hood. But, so it starts off, there's the Red Hood, which is a character has a red face mask and black mask, and they're kind of competing for the, who's the best crime boss or whatever. And like the Red Hood basically says to all these, you know, drug dealers and stuff like that, hey, I'm going to take something like 40% of your earnings, but I'll protect you from Batman and the Black Mask. The only thing is, don't deal to kids, right? And then, of course, Batman gets involved, and Nightwing gets involved as well. And so there's, you know, Batman and Nightwing are trying to figure out who the Red Hood is. And Black Mask is wanting to fight the Red Hood, but the Red Hood is a very good, you know, character, very, very strong character. So this is the spoiler, which I, if you know anything about Batman comics at all, it's not really a spoiler. The person under the Red Hood is, once again, spoiler alert, Jason Todd.
What?
Now what happened, yes. Now no. What happened was
he's
that,
dead.
I was just going to say, in an earlier, much earlier comic, I believe Death in the Family, Joker supposedly kills Jason Todd. And I guess what happens is a part of it. Yes, go ahead.
So for timeline, as far as Batman and such go, under the Red Hood, or I think it's just originally it's under the hood, but you know, everybody knows it's under the Red Hood, was published from November 2004 to February 2006. In 1988 is when A Death in the Family took place. So, about 16 years prior. So,
which makes sense because he was a boy when he quote unquote died, and he obviously comes back as a man.
He's a man.
And they go over like how he, you know, came alive again. Part of it is the Lazarus Pit part, but a part of it is like he woke up in the coffin and dug his way out.
Forgot about that.
And then like, but he had like no memory. Like he could kind of remember his parents, maybe, I think, but he didn't remember much. He remembered the name Bruce. But when the cops looked him up in the system, there was no missing person who had a father or family member as Bruce. You know, because obviously Jason Todd's not in the system. Jason Todd, Dick Grayson, Bruce Wayne, they're not in the system. And I say it's, well, that's not even the big part of it, is who. It's not really about who is Red Hood, it's why is he doing this. And I know we've talked about this on the podcast before, but I didn't remember until I read it. I'm like, oh yeah, Greg said that. Jason Todd, there's a scene where he is pissed that Batman let Joker live.
Mm-hmm.
Because Batman says something like, I'm sorry, or something like that to him. For like letting you die or something like that. He's like, no, I don't care about that. He goes, I want to know why you let him live. And he points at Joker, who's like in the room with them, because he had kidnapped Joker or whatever. He's like, you know, out of all this, because of what he did to me, why did you let him live?
Go ahead. Yeah, and you're right. It was it was the intent, kidnapping the Joker with the intent of killing him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Batman tells him, he's like, look, he's like, every day I think about, you know, killing him and stuff like that. And not just killing him, but torturing him, like, mercilessly for what he did to you. And he goes, but I can't, because if I do that, then, Jason Todd says, oh, yeah, because you're in moral code. You know, you can't do it, it's too tough. And Batman's like, no, it'd be way too easy to do it. He's like, think about it all the time, you know, mercilessly, you know, torturing him and then eventually killing him. And he's like, but I can't, because if I do that, then I'm no better than him. And you understand Batman's point of view, but then Jason Todd goes, no, I'm not talking about, you know, Penguin or Mr. Freeze or anybody. He goes, I'm just talking about Joker. That's it. And I'm talking about him. He's like the person who took me from you. You know.
And
so
I don't think I'm going to get the audio pulled up, but what I might do, what I'm going to do. We're gonna have we're gonna play the clip, because Jensen Ackles plays Red Hood in the 2010 yes. Batman Under the Red Hood animated.
Which, by the way, a lot of people might not know who Jensen Ackles is. If you don't, he played the coach Jason Teagues in Smallville. He's probably what he's best known for.
you say that, but that was kind of the launching point for. She was one of the Winchester brothers in Supernatural, because his time on Smallville predated Supernatural. And as we all know, Supernatural ran for 300 years.
Yes.
Or it felt
still,
like it.
They might still be running. Holy shit. They said it's over, but I don't think so.
That show, you know, all they did was try to evade death, but that show should have died 10 years ago. Maybe yeah. not. Okay, maybe not 10. Easily five or six. And now, of course, he is going to be Soldier Boy in The Boys, yes. which apparently...
And Jared Padalecki is Walker, Texas Ranger.
Yeah, that's weird too, man. Don't...
Yeah.
So I'll try to find that audio. Hopefully I can play that clip right now.
Bruce, I forgive you for not saving me. But why? Why on God's earth is he still alive? Ignoring what he's done in the past, blindly, stupidly disregarding the entire graveyards he's filled, the thousands who have suffered, the friends he's crippled. You know, I thought I'd be the last person you'd ever let him hurt. If it had been you that he'd beat to a bloody pulp, if he had taken you from this world, I would have done nothing but search the planet for this pathetic pile of evil death-worshipping garbage and send him off to hell!
If I allow myself to go down into that place, I'll never come back.
Why? I'm not talking about killing Penguin or Scarecrow or Dent. I'm talking about him. Just him. And doing it because he took me away from you.
So I also watched the animated movie, Batman Under the Red Hood. Very good movie. And yes, Jensen Ackles plays Jason Todd. The Joker is not played by Mark Hamill, who's kind of like the classic Joker voice. But John DiMaggio, who's a well-known voice actor. Jason Todd, I was like, I recognize that voice. I don't know who it is. So as I'm watching it, I go on Google and I look up the cast. So then Jensen Ackles, of course. And then I see John DiMaggio. I'm like, oh, and I know who he is.
Bender.
That's what I was going to say. So once I knew who it was, I kept hearing parts of Bender in his voice.
Let's run down, because it has a terrific voice cast, and I believe it was directed by Andrea Romano, vocally, who did so much DC work for, you know, a really long time, you know, for Warner Brothers and things like that. I mean, I think back to like Tiny Toon Adventures. So we mentioned Jensen Ackles as Jason Todd, John DiMaggio as Joker, NPH, Neil Patrick Harris was Dick Grayson / Nightwing, yep. Jason Isaacs, who you may not know the name, but you'd recognize him because he was Malfoy. He was Draco Malfoy's father in the Harry Potter movies. He was also in The Patriot, and I believe he was in G.I. Jane. Don't quote me on that one. Speaking of, you know, Bender, you have Futurama co-star Phil LaMarr in the movie. And Bruce Greenwood played Bruce Wayne / Batman. Do you know who Bruce Greenwood is, Mike?
No, I did not at first. But like I said, I looked him up. He looks really familiar. He's one of those actors where you're like, I've seen that guy. I've seen that guy in several movies. I forget which movies I've seen him in.
So he was in National Treasure 2, Book of Secrets.
Yes, yes.
He was in he was in the Star Trek reboot series as Commander Pike. Or Captain Pike, I believe.
Yeah.
He's been in a bunch of stuff. He was in Kingsman, The Golden Circle, and much more.
Yes.
I mean, we could go into everything, but it's funny. He played an American president in National Treasure, and he himself is Canadian. I didn't think you could do that.
Probably got deported as president. But yeah, no, the movie's very good too. I really enjoyed both the book and the movie.
I said that he played an American president in National Treasure Book of Secrets. He played JFK in 13 Days.
Oh, also an American president.
Yeah. Like a real one, not a fictional one. Okay. He's also been in Young Justice, Batman, Gotham by Gaslight, and Batman Death in the Family. So he's played Bruce Wayne a few times.
So I've already started reading my next one, because once the Batman Under the Hood was done, I reached into the gym bag again, pulled out the comic book. This one's a bigger one.
Uh-oh.
I might have to do like a part one and part two, depending on how much I read of it.
Is it Multiversity?
Yes. Oh. Multiverse. And dude, I'm a couple pages in. It's just like, wow.
That's Grant Morrison, if I remember correctly.
Yes. Grant Morrison. Yeah. That's what you said. Yeah.
And so it's already a mindfuck from the beginning, because that's just how he is. But it is. I want to use one of Kevin Smith's phrases as regarding to its girth, but I'm not going to. But it is a big book. The other one that is equally large and robust, if you would have said Justice League New Frontier. That's another thick book. But when you said it was a big book, I was like, oh, Multiversity. And I read Multiverse. I was very excited to read Multiversity. And by the end of it, I was very confused.
Oh, God.
I just want to prepare you.
So it might not be next week's YouTube or podcast, but it might be the week after.
I felt that it was because it's part of Morrison's writing, part of his charm is like he goes into such insane detail, but he weaves like just these so very poetic tapestries. And but you might have to like put that down and read like a little golden book or something like that to give your mind a rest. By the way, I have some of those if you need to borrow them.
Okay.
Like Jurassic Park. Got Jurassic Park. A little golden book. So anything else for Under the Hood?
No.
Okay. Mike, we are 52, almost 53 minutes into this episode, and we've yet to even mention the thing that at the end of the YouTube show you said it's going to be first thing out of the gate. You're going to spoil season 3 of Cobra Kai.
I was thinking about it. How long has Cobra Kai been out? When was the air date?
New Year's Day. So officially 9 days.
Okay, they're safe. Because for movies, I'm going to give you a week to see it, or a weekend.
You mean giving me a weekend?
No, not me. You, the listener. TV, I'll go 2 weeks.
Okay. So are we going to talk about Cobra Kai next week?
Well, we can. Well, I mean, it's up to you.
Let's shelve Cobra Kai.
Okay.
I know that there's one news and note that you had put on Facebook earlier tonight, and I remember saying I can't wait to talk about this thing I don't know about, or I didn't know it was a thing. This is about Green Arrow and the Canaries.
Oh yeah, there's nothing to talk about. Most times I read the articles. This one I didn't.
I actually did, and most of the time I don't.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So I'm. What was it about, Greg?
So, did you watch the conclusion of Arrow?
I think so. I know about it, at least.
Okay. Well, it concluded its 8-season run on CW, but before the series finale, and I'm reading this verbatim, word for word, from SuperheroHype.com, a writer by the name of Jake Abate, A-B-B-A-T-E. Give him credit where credit's due, I suppose. Especially since I'm reading it word for word. The penultimate episode sent viewers back to the year 2040, which is a very weird place to go. I'd be like forward to the year 2020, where Oliver Queen's daughter, Maya or Mia, M-I-A, I don't know, became the new Emerald Archer. The episode was intended as a backdoor pilot for a spinoff series headlined by Mia and two of her father's allies. Unfortunately, Arrowverse fans won't be returning to the Star City of the future anytime soon. Variety reporting the CW is not moving forward with the Green Arrow and the Canaries. would have featured Catherine McNamara reprising her role as Mia Queen. Series was also supposed to star Katie Cassidy and Juliana Harkavy, who would return as Laurel Lance and Dinah Drake, respectively, which is puzzling to me because Katie Cassidy, who played Laurel Lance for, you know, the 8 seasons of the show, would then be like 50 in 2040?
Yeah.
I mean, that character would be,
right,
you know, it's like, that doesn't make, and the promotional picture, I suppose, does not indicate that would be a 50-year-old. Like, are we that dumb, Mike? Mike, are we that dumb?
I wonder if it's, like with the X-Men, like where, you know, First Class, and then the First Class was in the 50s, and then up to Apocalypse was supposed to be in the 80s.
80s. Apocalypse was 80s, and
the Days of Future Past, or no, what came after Apocalypse?
The Phoenix one. Dark Phoenix.
That was supposed to be the 90s, but it was supposed to be like Michael Fassbender was supposed to play like a person in his 70s,
right?
You know, and Beast was supposed to be there in his 50s and played by Nicholas Holt.
So I just thought about this as the workaround, at least for Green Arrow and the Canaries, is if you have Laurel Lance and Dinah Drake reprise, or, you know, the Katie Cassidy and Juliana Harkavy reprising their roles. I don't know why I didn't think about it sooner, because I about got bent out of shape, or I did get bent out of shape. But you are in the CW verse, the Arrowverse, however you want to phrase it, where the Legends of Tomorrow were there. So all you have to do is get scooped up by the Legends and dropped off 20 years from now, and you're still as old as you are now.
That is true. Yeah, so, yeah, absolutely.
I don't know if that was their plan, having not seen the last few seasons of Arrow. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you there.
No, you're fine. I'll say that, absolutely. That probably would make more sense, doing stuff like that. It could also be flashbacks, video, you know, like she made a video or something, or she, I don't know why they would do it, but she was part of some AI system.
Well, you did share the link, and the link has the promotional image of Green Lantern and the Canaries in 2040.
Green Lantern and the Canaries?
I mean, I'm sorry, Green Arrow and
the Canaries. Oh, that changed it up.
Green Arrow
Green
and the
Hornet
Canaries.
And the Canaries.
Green Goblin and the Canaries. Green Giant and the Canaries.
There's a lot of green heroes and villains.
Where else can we go? Who else is green? I mean, Hulk's green, but he's not like Green Hulk.
I wouldn't be surprised though, but maybe like in the beginning they called him Green Hulk or something.
Maybe.
I know they never did, but it'd be cool.
Because especially when at the beginning he was gray.
That's true.
All right, so that's no. Where do you think is there strength still to the CW verse, or do you think that it's fading? Like, do you think it's past its prime?
Yeah, it's probably past its prime. I stopped watching, I don't know, same for you, Arrow, maybe like season 3 or something like that, and I tried to get back into it. Wasn't bad. Flash I like, but Flash is already in its 5th season. Legends of Tomorrow I like. I think they're done 3 seasons, but they don't have much. I think Flash might be the most popular one.
I agree. You know, they had Supergirl. Supergirl's into its last season. Black Lightning, which is not really in the Arrowverse, but that's, I think, in its last season. They're going to have Superman and Lois. They're going to have a second season of Batwoman, and that's all they're going to have, if I'm being honest. I just don't think...
Yeah.
I didn't watch the first season with Ruby Rose. I just don't... I'm not saying that there's not a market for it. There's not people who like the show. I just don't think it's enough. You know?
Right.
And... I mean, Stargirl. I have enjoyed the Stargirl that I've watched on HBO Max, and I think that's going over to CW.
Right.
Also, I know that they put the 10 episodes of Swamp Thing on CW when they needed stuff. Like, we're not in production. We need something to throw out there, so let's give them Swamp Thing. And I still want to watch that. Like, it's not on HBO Max yet. It was on the DC Universe app. So I think I can watch. I think I can pull it off my DVR and watch it that way. I don't know. But my CW like hero watching days are. But I'll be honest with you, my having any say in what's really watching, unless there's a game on that I'm like really jazzed about. My TV watching's really not in my hands anymore. Yeah, yeah. So, and it's only going to get crazier. But is what that's not a complaint. That's so I don't know. I haven't sat down and even watched The Flash in years. Sorry, Mike.
He still goes fast.
He's still running. His name's still Barry.
Fucking shit up. He's running his fucking shit up.
You think he'd be better at it by now?
Oh God! Here's every end of every season, kind of. Okay, I'm gonna go back in time and I'm gonna change this. But Barry, last time you did that, it didn't work out. Yes, but this time it will. Goes back, changes stuff. Oh no, I fucked it up again.
Oh, I mean, honestly, I got more joy out of watching like Lovecraft Country than I did out of like watching the last bit of the CW shows. I'm enjoying watching Grimm. I'm gonna harp on this till I'm done. I had a moment of panic. I finished the second season, and it's always like right up there when I go into Amazon Prime, you know, video. It's always right up there. It's like watch next, and it wasn't there. And I was like, I'm two seasons in. I have four to go. It needs to be here and free so that I can watch.
Yeah.
What they should do, I hope Jeff Bezos isn't listening, but like you have a series like that, and it's got six seasons, make five of them free. And if you want to know the rest of the story, you got to pay for it. Right now, all six seasons are free, so I've got to buckle down and get to it. But I am enjoying that show. I'm into it the third season now, and I think my wife was like laughing at me, although on the inside, so where I wouldn't be offended by her laughing at me, because the main character and his romantic partner, she had like some memory issues. She couldn't remember him. There was a lot of tension, and then they finally like reunited. She figured it out. And I was like, I put my fist in the air triumphantly, like I had anything to do with it. I was like, yes. And she just looks over. She's like, okay. I said, you haven't watched all the episodes, honey. You don't know. This has been a long time coming.
Trust me, honey. It's not weird.
This is a 22 episode season. We're into episode 20 or 21. And she hasn't recognized him as her almost fiance since season one. This is big deal, honey.
Yeah.
So I'm enjoying him. But now that we are past the hour mark, Mike, let's call it a night.
All right.
Especially since I've got to try to find the audio for under the red hood, so I don't forget and get that put in place. Mike, you're a gosh darn legend. All right, everybody, we appreciate you hanging out with us as Mike and I talk comics and movies and TV and more. This week was a very comics heavy episode, and we don't do those too often, so I was really happy for it. Be part of our Nerds United reading club, book club, and let us know in the comments what comics you've been reading, and if you recommend them, if you've picked up on any of our recommendations based on what you've heard from us in a hopefully non-spoilery way, and just keep on reading and loving life, and That's it. He's the co-host of the year, Mike Luther. I'm Greg Mahochko. Thank you for being here. Subscribe and comment and interact and talk with us, because we sure love it. So until next time, be kind.
And rewind.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.